Is this maybe why we have cellulite?
Yes.
Let's go!
The most energetic, fit, and stress-resilient people on the planet practice daily habits to keep their hormones balanced, their gut healthy, and their muscles and mind strong. Welcome to That Fitness Couple. We're Mike and Corey Beth Lepowski, founders of Pure Physique.
This podcast is designed to provide you with everything we've discovered and continue to discover about nutrition, training, and lifestyle. Today, we all live hectic lives.
So we've made it our mission to make your fitness time efficient and to build you up. Hope you share and enjoy. Let's dive into today's episode.
Let's go.
Welcome back to That Fitness Couple. In today's episode, we delve into a fascinating discussion with Dr. Chris Kenobi. We explore the transformative power of ancestral diets in combating a range of modern health issues, including obesity, coronary heart disease, cancer, type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, and age-related macular degeneration. Dr. Kenobi is a nutrition research expert and author of The Ancestral Diet Revolution: How Vegetable Oils and Processed Foods Destroy Our Health. And in this interview, he sheds light on the detrimental impact of vegetable oils, which we'll commonly refer to as seed oils. We navigate through all the places we find them in our diets and talk about the compelling evidence Chris has gathered over the past 10 years linking seed oils to the escalating global health crises we see and how returning to an ancestral way of eating can be a key to reversing these diseases. Get ready as we uncover the hidden truths behind seed oils and their far-reaching implications on our health. All right, everybody. So here we have Dr. Chris Kenobi with us. And Dr. Kenobi, we're going to go do our rapid fire true and false questions. Your options are true, false, or if you believe something needs a caveat, which we'll go deeper into later on, then you could just say true or false with a caveat. You ready to rock and roll?
Sounds good, Mike and Corey Beth. Yeah, good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, we're excited to have you here. All righty. So let's go ahead and kick it off with this one. Sugar consumption is the single biggest cause of our increasing obesity and declining health over the past 60 years.
False.
All right. Vegetable oils such as canola, sunflower, safflower, corn, peanut, and palm are the primary drivers of chronic disease.
True. Absolutely true.
Number three, it's the amount of these fats and not the fat itself that is the root cause.
True. Have to think about that.
Yes, I love it. It's a truthful answer.
Yeah.
Number four, it was your work as an ophthalmologist that led you into the world of nutrition research.
False.
Number five, ancestral eating puts big limits on the amount of enjoyable foods we can eat.
True.
Love it. Next is we should trust the research coming out of Harvard University that seed oils are not only safe, but very important for heart health.
Absolutely false.
All right. Number seven, along those lines, observational studies are our most reliable way of uncovering the truth about nutrition.
True.
All right. You don't earn a living from your nutritional research and writing.
True.
All right. And number nine, you are the great-great-grandson of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Absolutely true.
our younger boys are going to be happy to hear that. Guys, we interviewed today. They're going to be so excited. Excellent.
You know, I got to tell you guys, I've never seen a Star Wars movie.
No way.
No, I've never. It's not my thing. You know, I can't get into those.
Oh, wow.
I get through the previews and that's about it. It's just not my thing. Sorry.
That's okay. Once you get
sorry to disappoint.
No, not at all. Once you get in, it's hard to get out. It was never a thing for me until we had two sons. And, you know, it's just an enjoyable thing.
All right. Well, anyway, kicking things off, you know, Dr. Kenobi, you have a background that I would say mirrors very similarly that of Weston Price. And for our audience who does not know who Weston Price is, he was a Canadian dentist who basically traveled the world to many remote areas to observe the dental health of these people in these regions that, you know, the Western civilization had really not gotten to yet, and observed that these people had incredible dental health, but they had incredible health in general, and that it wasn't until the introduction of flour and sugar and vegetable oils that these people started to experience a lot of the Western disease that we see today. So can you just take our audience on a little bit of a journey where you started and, you know, how your background as an ophthalmologist has led you to where you are today in terms of your knowledge and understanding around nutrition and then specifically around vegetable oils?
Okay, sure. Well, so I guess that I really got started in this, you guys, because I, out of my own suffering with arthritis, and that led me to start a paleo diet in 2011 myself, or just a partial paleo diet. And I had this huge improvement in arthritis that I'd been suffering with at that time for maybe 17, 18 years. And I read Lauren Cordain's book, The Paleo Answer, and there were some, I was just, I found that just mind-boggling, you know, that processed foods could be driving obesity and all of this chronic disease, because I'd never understood that. Here I was, you know, 21 years out of medical school, and I had no idea that processed foods had anything to do really with most all of this overweight, obesity, and chronic disease, like coronary heart disease, strokes, cancer, diabetes, metabolic disease, on and on. And, but there were some things, and I won't go into this, about Lauren Cordain's work that just didn't jive with me. I didn't really feel that it was true. For example, you know, saturated fat was problematic. I was convinced that couldn't be true because of the Maasai warriors that consumed almost half their diet of saturated fat, or over 40%. And they were healthy. But anyway, so I kept investigating. I came across Weston Price's work 2 years later in 2013, and I just devoured that book. And that's what really changed my life. And you described it well, Mike. So Weston Price was, I always say, a highly accomplished scientist, researcher, and dentist who traveled the world in the 1930s for about 6 years, evaluated people on 5 continents, 14 nations, hundreds of tribes and villages, thousands upon thousands of people, as they mostly were, you know, transitioning from Western or from, you know, native traditional diets to westernized diets. You know, some of the populations were and some weren't, but they were genetic cohorts. And that made his research extraordinarily valuable. So as you said, Mike, the main takeaway points from Price's work was that those people that began to consume refined flour, sugars, vegetable oils, canned goods, sweets, confectionery, those kinds of processed foods, they developed dental decay, and they went on to develop arthritis and cancers and lots of degenerative disease. And so understanding that really set the framework for everything that I've done since. And everything that I work on is, I see it through the lens of Weston A. Price. And So in 2013, 10 years ago, I understood this broad framework that these processed foods were driving coronary heart disease, cancers, diabetes, metabolic disease. I understood all of that. And that's when I questioned. It occurred to me as an ophthalmologist that the processed foods might also be driving age-related macular degeneration, AMD, which is the leading cause of irreversible vision loss and blindness in people over the age of 50 worldwide. So I began to investigate that. And many people do think that I started with macular degeneration and then branched out to all, you know, all this other chronic disease, but it was really the opposite. I understood, you know, the main drivers of chronic disease first, then applied that to macular degeneration. And I investigated that as best I could for about a year and a half while I was still in practice. And in February of 2015, I was so convinced that that hypothesis that processed foods and sugars, refined flours, vegetable oils were driving macular degeneration that I left practice to pursue that full time. And in about another year and a half, I had formed a group, including some ophthalmologists from the South Pacific Islands and a researcher from Europe. And we investigated that, and we looked at data in 25 nations of sugar and vegetable oil consumption versus age-related macular degeneration prevalence in these 25 nations. And the data supported that hypothesis in every single case. So I published a paper, published a book, started a nonprofit foundation in regards to macular degeneration. And that's what I focused on from about 2015 to 2018. But what I kept coming back to, you guys, is that everywhere I looked, I saw that vegetable oils seem to be the primary driver of overweight, obesity, coronary heart disease, cancers, diabetes, metabolic disease. And there weren't a lot of people talking about this. And so that's why I went public with this in 2019. And this is where the focus of my work has been over the past 5 years, really, is vegetable oils and chronic disease. And just everywhere I look, all the data seems to support this hypothesis. Or maybe I shouldn't say all of it, but the enormous majority of it seems to support this hypothesis that high omega-6, which is prominent in seed oils, vegetable oils, or the highly polyunsaturated vegetable oils anyway, that appears to be a major driver of obesity and chronic disease. I think that I've said before that I believe seed oils probably account for roughly 90% of obesity across worldwide. And I think they account for around 99% of the cause of diabetes. And I can say that because, which means that they're the cause of metabolic syndrome, because you know, those run together, metabolic syndrome and diabetes, insulin resistance, that all goes together. And so I can say that because, you know, for example, in the United States, where we have the best data, I'll just throw this out quickly, that in 1890, well, we had significant amounts of sugar in the diet. I think it was around 10.8% of the diet in 1890 was sugar in the United States. And yet diabetes affected 0.0028% of the population. That's 2.8 per 100,000 people. As of 2016, that number is 13%, or 13,000 per 100,000 people. So we went from 2.8 per 100,000 in 1890 to 13,000 per 100,000. Well, in 1890, we had about 1 gram of vegetable oils in our food supply. So the first vegetable oil introduced, or seed oil introduced to the majority of the world, was cottonseed oil, introduced in about 1866 in the United States. And then there's very low level consumption until 1909, when then soybean oil entered the food supply. And then that bumped up the vegetable oil consumption from about 1 gram to about 9 grams a day that year per person per day. And we were at 19 grams by 1960. And by 2010, 80 grams of vegetable oil per person per day in the United States. Now, that's not corrected for losses. So if you correct it for losses, you still are going to be down to around, so that's 32% of U.S. caloric intake is vegetable oils as of 2010, at 80 grams a day. Because 80 grams is 720 calories worth, or 32% of caloric intake. Again, now if you take out losses, you might be down to 24% at the lowest. So it's around a fourth of our food supply, and up to a third in the U.S. is vegetable oils. And, you know, people have to realize that these vegetable oils almost completely supplanted and replaced lard, butter, and beef tallow as the traditional fats in all traditional diets where they added fat. I mean, that's what people used throughout most of history, are those fats. And people will say, well, we had olive oil. And yes, we did. But probably roughly maybe 5, maybe 10% of the population worldwide could get any olive oil. And when they did, the consumption was extremely low. So this is what's happened. And along with, you know, along with this replacement of the animal fats with vegetable oils, we've had just an explosion of all of these chronic diseases, you know, coronary heart disease, cancer, diabetes, metabolic syndrome, Alzheimer's, dementia, age-related macular degeneration. All of these things have paralleled this increase in the vegetable oils. Well, that was a long answer to a...
That's excellent. I mean, I love getting the history behind it. And to have, again, this goes back to the question around observational data, because, you know, you pointed out that's what it looks like in the U.S., but also you've pointed out that it's not just in the U.S. that we see this, that you've also taken these observations with other countries that are also traditionally maybe higher carbohydrate consuming nations. And we've placed a lot of the blame on carbohydrates as being the evil villain in the story of why we have obesity. And yes, we look at sugar, but we just look at carbs in general. And yet you've shown that in other countries where their carbohydrate consumption is actually decreased, that we're still seeing the prevalence of these chronic diseases. So can you, you know, talk a little bit about some of the other countries where you've made these observations?
Yeah, that's a great point, Mike. And so, yeah, so I keep some of this data handy when I do podcasts. So I happen to have Japan and China data sitting right here for this question, because I can't keep all of these numbers in my head. I do keep a lot of them in my head. I'm kind of a data junkie, as you probably know from my book. I live and die by the data, because I just don't feel like that I can't make any statement if I can't support it with strong evidence of data, typically. So anyway, when people broadly vilify carbohydrates as the cause of all this chronic disease, that just flies in the face of so many populations around the world that we know are consuming very high carbohydrate diets and traditionally have also been very, very healthy. And the Japanese are probably the quintessential example. So I wish I could show this graph, but I'll just describe this really quickly. So in 1960, the Japanese, we know, were among probably one of the most healthy populations in the world, at least in the developed world. And first of all, their total calorie consumption in about 1960 was 2,837 calories. And by 2004-ish, that had dropped down to 1,950 calories. Their calories had gone down 31%. Their carbohydrates in 1960, 84%, when they were very healthy. By 2004 to 2010, carbohydrate had dropped to 56%. The fat went from 5% in 1960 to 27% in about 2004. So it more than quadrupled. Their saturated fat recently 7%. It's the lowest in the developed world. But what did their seed oils do? And this is the most interesting part. Their seed oils increased from, I've been given this in calories, and all of a sudden I'm switching to grams here. I apologize. But the seed oils went from 9 grams a day in 1961, which would be 81 calories, to 39 grams a day by 2004. So it's 340-ish calories. So the seed oils went up 4.5-fold during this period. Okay. So their omega-6 consumption, which is the omega-6 is the critical component of this omega-6 linoleic acid, was 1% in 1960. That increased to 7.8% by about 2004 to 2010, somewhere in there. So again, I'm just going to repeat this. So their calories are going way down by almost a third. Their carbohydrate went way down from 84% to 56%. And their sugar, I didn't have that data handy, but their sugar increased. I don't have those numbers handy. I apologize. But so their sugar increased from 1960 to 1989, and then it was steadily dropping after 1989. So the sugar was going down quite a lot. And so this is what happened to them during this period. Obesity in the men, not the women, but in the men, doubled, went from 16% in 1978 to 31.2% by 2010. Breast cancer in women, of course, increased about fivefold between 1975 and 1999. Diabetes between 1954 and 2007 increased 345-fold from 0.02% to 6.9%, okay, 345-fold. Age-related macular degeneration increased from 0.2% in the late 1970s to 16.37% by 2013. That's an increase of 82-fold. So we see, obesity, diabetes, cancer, and there's multiple cancers that are involved, actually, and macular degeneration all going through the roof, right? While the calories, carbohydrates, and sugar all go down. But what's the one thing going up? It went up 4.5-fold during this period, was the vegetable oil. So I think this is Japan, to me, we've got the strongest data there of probably anywhere in the world. And this data, all the data after 1961 comes out of the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, the FAO. And that's the most trusted data source there is worldwide. And I'll mention one other one. So let me mention China. In China, let me just start with this. Between 1990 and 2014, overweight and obesity increased from 15.3% to 42%. So it almost tripled. And total incidence of cancers increased from 495 per 100,000 for the same period, approximately, around 1991 to 2016. Cancers increased from 495 per 100,000 to 1,587 per 100,000. So total major cancers increased about threefold. Now, during this period, they had almost no sugar consumption. They have the eighth lowest sugar consumption in the world. It's 2.5% of their calories. And again, that's sugar availability. So it's actually the consumption's even lower than that, but it's about 60 to 80 calories per day. It's, you know, 4 teaspoons of sugar per person per day since about the 1980s. All right. So all trivial sugar consumption, but their vegetable oils increased from 30 calories per day in 1961 to 204 calories by 2018. So it went up about more than sixfold. So again, so we've got, you know, trivial sugar consumption, vegetable oils going up more than sixfold. So during this period, you know, cancer increased about threefold. Diabetes, by the way, increased 78%. So it's almost doubled. Cardiovascular disease between 1990 and 2017 increased 15%. Overweight and obesity, as I mentioned, went up almost threefold from 15.3% to 42%. And even lung cancer increased 465% during this period, while smoking went down. So, you know, what are people going to blame it on? And the one thing that's going up is the vegetable oils.
So these are incredibly scary statistics. And I know for a listener listening, they don't want to be overweight or obese. They definitely don't want cancer, diabetes, right? All of these terrible metabolic conditions that we face. But I think a lot of people are still maybe confused. Would you lay out for us where exactly are these seed oils in our food consumption?
Oh, I'm glad you asked, Corey Beth, because, you know, so many people will say, including my own mother, will say, well, I don't put any vegetable oils in my food, but you don't need to. You can get all of that. You can get 80 grams a day easily from our food supply because the vegetable oils are in almost all processed foods. If there's an added fat, it's usually going to be a highly polyunsaturated vegetable oil like soybean, corn, canola, cottonseed, rapeseed, sunflower, safflower, rice bran, peanut oil, and sesame oil. Those. All restaurants cook in vegetable oils, almost all of them. I mean, the very fancy restaurants will, you know, may use butter, but even those, they often use vegetable oils. All fast food is cooked in vegetable oils if they use any kind of fat, which they almost all do. So you can get a load of vegetable oils and not realize it. And this is really the hidden fat and the hidden ingredient that people are not thinking about. So, you know, people don't look at a plate and just realize, you know, they just don't see the vegetable oils there, but they're there when they're coming from fast food and restaurant food and processed food.
I think that that's the scariest part of it all is it is so hidden. And even we were reviewing our grocery list last night with our two young boys, and we don't do veggie sticks or anything like that. But I know a lot of people still do because we view it as healthy, but they're cooked in all these seed oils. And then even one of the healthier, quote unquote, mayonnaise is that we were looking at, you know, I'm like, Mike, should we? And I opened up the ingredients and right there, it was safflower oil. I'm like, son of a gun. It's in your condiments. It's in your snacks. It's in your wraps. It's in your breads. It is literally laced in everything.
Yeah, it is. It's just ubiquitous. Yeah. Everywhere you look, it's just, it's vegetable oils. And the reason for that is profit, because the butter, for example, costs about sixfold more than soybean oil. So manufacturing, people can't, you know, taste the difference for the most part, you know, in a lot of these processed foods. And, you know, they need to add fat to their foods to make them palatable and satisfying. And so that's what they add.
Yeah.
It's all about profit.
That was my next question, is why? Why are we doing this? But that definitely makes sense. I mean, we buy Kerrygold butter from Ireland, and it's expensive, you know, to get that. But we understand the implications of health. So, you know, you make cuts in other areas, you know? Hey, we hope you're enjoying our show and finding it valuable. If you could do us a quick favor, it would mean the world to us. Please take a moment to rate and review our podcast on your favorite platform. Your reviews help us reach more people and share our message. Plus, we'd love to hear your feedback. Thanks for being awesome and supporting us. Now, back to the show.
I think what's interesting too is that, you know, we were half joking, but not joking when we asked the question about studies coming out of Harvard. And the reason being is that a lot of times when you go and search seed oils online, or if you search specifically seed oil safety, the first three or four articles that come up all come out of Harvard, mm-hmm. and they're all research studies that say, well, there's no harm in seed oils. We do not see any. So we know that, again, the amount of funding that Harvard gets, and whoever, whoever Chan is, sponsors there, you know, there's a lot of money going through, and we don't know what's the reason why. Because here you have what's supposed to be one of the most reputable universities on the face of the earth constantly feeding us information or misinformation about the health of these seed oils. And you can't help but think that there is something nefarious going on, because how else could this be? I mean, your observational data shows that there is a clear correlation between these things. And I know that we're always supposed to say correlation doesn't mean causation, but it's like, it's kind of hard to ignore.
Seems irrefutable.
It really does. Yeah. And so, you know, why else would they be leaning so heavily on this other than funding? But I guess also, you know, what you've probably taken a look at their science, and what do you see as the gaps in the science that they're presenting?
That's a good question, Mike. And, you know, first of all, Harvard, Tufts University in Boston, Mayo Clinic, as far as I know, to some degree, these organizations are, heavily funded by big food and big pharma, right? And neither one of those has any interest at all in our health. You know, big food is just out for pure profit, really. They don't really care what you're eating as long as it makes them money. And big pharma, of course, you know, the sicker we are, the more chronic disease we have, the more money they make. You know, so Harvard, they try to keep it quiet, but Nina Teicholz has done some good work investigating this, and she's uncovered a lot of links between big food and Harvard, for example. You know, so big food is funding a lot of this research, and they fund paper, you know, research after research after research to just flood the research market with papers that, you know, cloud our judgment, really, and try to, they've got a goal in mind when they start with this, you know, with their research, is to pump out papers that, you know, support the belief system or the hypothesis that, you know, processed foods are not the primary problem. You know, that most of this chronic disease is about aging and genetics, for example, and it's just not true. And this is why we don't see these diseases in hunter-gatherer populations, subsistence agriculturists, these kinds of populations, you know, that are not consuming processed foods. We just don't see coronary heart disease, cancers, strokes, diabetes, metabolic disease, Alzheimer's, dementia, macular degeneration. Well, best I can tell, there's one population for macular degeneration in that regard. But anyway, you know, those populations don't get these diseases, and they don't become overweight and obese, essentially.
Well, in talking about polyunsaturated fats, a lot of the claims that are made is that, well, these polyunsaturated fats is what helps to lower our cholesterol, and that in turn is why we should be consuming these seed oils or vegetable oils, or why they are completely safe. And yet we know that that has also been debunked, that these, you know, polyunsaturated fats, and I also don't want to vilify those just in the same way I wouldn't want to vilify carbohydrates, because they are important to our health, but there's a big difference between, as you've already cited, big difference between the amount that we can get from our regular whole foods, and we're getting it one time from our whole foods, versus what we're getting today. So can you talk a little bit more about, again, the amounts and how that ties into this?
About the amounts of the seed oils that we're getting?
Correct.
Yeah. And first, you know, Mike and Corey Beth, I want to say that some of my presentations, you know, live presentations on a stage, I start with the fact that these organizations, Harvard, Tufts, Mayo Clinic, American Heart Association, they all tell us to consume vegetable oils. And, you know, I've been studying this for 12 years. And as far as I can tell, there is one single reason that they can, medical reason that they can support their belief system that these vegetable oils are healthy. And it's because they lower our cholesterol. And as I then say is, well, guess what? So does arsenic. Doesn't necessarily mean it's healthy. And it's true. And the reason that both vegetable oils and arsenic lower our cholesterol, and they do, and they have very, very similar outcomes, like chronic arsenic poisoning and vegetable oil significant doses have very similar outcomes. They both cause overweight, obesity, diabetes, metabolic disease, cognitive failure, insulin resistance, all of these things. They're very similar. Why is that? And the reason is they both are highly pro-oxidative. So that's how heavy metals kill us, is through their pro-oxidative, you know, damaging effects. So, you know, back to your question about vegetable oils, our consumption, and, you know, what is that associated with, I think is the question, Mike. And so we had in our food supply, we had practically worldwide the total vegetable oil consumption per capita in 1865 was approximately zero worldwide. 95% of the population had absolutely no oils in their diet and never had. This is a time when we didn't have hardly any of these, you know, chronic diseases that are so common today. Again, that's risen to, like in the United States, 80 grams per person per day by 2010, but worldwide, in 2016, I believe it was, it's in the book that, you know, the average consumption of vegetable oils per person per day was around 65 grams. Now, some of those oils are good, like coconut oil, a little bit of palm kernel oil, and olive oil. And those latter two are very small in consumption. But what happens is when you're consuming the high omega-6 oils, which is mostly the seed oils that we've talked about, they are very high in omega-6 linoleic acid. And omega-6 linoleic acid accumulates in our body fat, in our cell membranes, and in our inner mitochondrial membranes, where it damages mitochondrial function and leads to mitochondrial dysfunction and insulin resistance and ultimately diabetes and metabolic disease. And so, for example, there are four studies of populations that I know of that were completely ancestral and had their adipose, their body fat, analyzed for these fatty acids. And these were all done in 1968, 1969 it was, but by Ian Pryor and colleagues in the Pacific Islands. And these four populations averaged 2.8% omega-6 linoleic acid in their body fat that ranged from 2.6 to 3.2. So in the United States, omega-6 linoleic acid averaged 9.1% in 1959 in the US, and that elevated to 21.5% by 2008. Okay, so we should be 2.8%, right? We're at 21.5%. Worldwide, we looked at all of the studies done in many, many developed nations, just as many as we could find. I can't tell you exactly how many there are, but there's probably, you know, 20 or 30 countries, I can't remember exactly, that are represented in that. And the average omega-6 linoleic acid was, in recent years, again, since 1990, was over 14%. I think it was 14.2%. So again, these omega-6s are accumulating in our body fat. And what we're seeing, again, right along with that is, you know, everybody's just scratching their head. All these scientists are scratching their head. Why are we becoming so obese? Why are we becoming so diabetic? Why is metabolic syndrome ubiquitous? Why is Alzheimer's disease going through the roof, macular degeneration going through the roof? It's all the same thing. We're being poisoned with these high omega-6 oils. And why do they do this? Because they're highly, four things. They're highly pro-oxidative, pro-inflammatory, directly toxic through advanced lipid oxidation end products, and nutrient deficient. They don't have vitamins A, D, and K2. So none of the vegetable oils, even the really healthy ones like coconut oil or really good quality olive oil, they do not contain vitamins A, D, or K2. So you put those four, I call those the four pillars of hazard together, pro-oxidative, pro-inflammatory, toxic, and nutrient deficient, and you have the recipe to drive overweight, obesity, cancer, coronary heart disease, diabetes, all this disease, right? This is what's driving it. We're just slowly being poisoned with these so-called heart-healthy oils. And, you know, that's where my research has led me in, you know, the last decade.
It's fascinating. And I think you really answered my next question, which is, what is the mechanism by which these omega-6s are affecting our health? And so, I mean, I just have to ask a side question for the ladies.
Sure.
Is this maybe why we have cellulite?
Yes.
Really?
It's a combination. Yeah. Well, it's a combination of that. And I think a diet that is mineral deficient and, you know, deficient in what all of the things that would ultimately result in collagen production. So cellulite, I think, you know, it's a combination of having, you know, subcutaneous fat and poor production of the collagen that leads to breakdown in that collagen beneath the skin, you know, beneath the skin, and therefore creates that dimpling effect. And so you have to, so I would say the way to, you know, to avoid that, number one, is a diet that has zero vegetable oils and a diet that I think, you know, should be rich in fruits and vegetables, because that's where we're getting most of our minerals. And this is something that I've discovered over the last couple of years that, I mean, but that I understand now is, to me, it is so important, and why it's the reason why fruits and vegetables have, you know, for so many decades have been shown to be beneficial. And I do believe that that's true.
Wow. Okay. That's amazing that you said that.
Can I just jump in?
Yeah, please.
And I think also to add to that, I mean, it makes sense from the standpoint that we've been pushed down this road of low fat diets, right? We're replacing healthy foods and especially healthy meats with these foods that have all of these vegetable oils in them. They're all high in these omega-6 fatty acids. And And between all of that mechanism, it makes perfect sense that you take out all the things that could provide you with the vitamins and minerals that you need and the collagen, especially that you're going to get from your animal sourced proteins. You take all that out, or at least you significantly reduce it, and then you replace it with this. And it makes perfect sense that people are struggling with these chronic diseases. But like you said, pointing out for the ladies
it's
specifically.
It's aesthetic too. Yeah. I mean, it completely is. Well, I had my own hypothesis.
Yeah.
We joked with clients. We had been consuming a lot of protein bars for a period of time. And I noticed that the cellulite on the front of my legs had gotten worse. And I said to Mike, I'm like, I might be crazy, but I really think it's these protein bars. And of course, I'm not going to announce the brand and throw shade on someone's company, but we cut out the protein bars and the cellulite on my legs improved. So the next question everyone's going to want to know is this reversible? And so you're saying, yes, it is, by cutting out seed oils, increasing fruits, vegetables. And then would you say to meat, animal meat?
Yeah. I'm sorry. What was the last thing you said?
Meat, animal meat, steak.
What about it?
By improving that. So we have more collagen.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I think all that's true, Corey Beth. I everything you just said. Yeah. Those would be the ways to reduce this problem. And, you know, I'm glad you're open enough to say that, you know, that you had cellulite, which improved with this. And I think that, you know, one of the reasons I used to eat, I was always trying to be healthy. I grew up as an athlete and was always trying to be healthy. And I thought, you know, for 20 plus years, I thought protein bars and protein powders and all that. This is before I had any knowledge about nutrition at all. I was just, you know, I was dumb as a stick, you know, about all this up till 2011. But now I see that, like, when you take something out, the thing that I now understand so much more than I ever did is that every time you take something out, you replace it with something else. And often what you're replacing it with is more important than what you took out. Now, that's not true about the vegetable oils. You've got to get rid of those to be healthy. That's just a given. But, you know, if you take out a protein bar and let's say you put in, you know, bananas or plantains or watermelon or sweet potatoes, these kind of things will add all kinds of minerals to your diet, you know, magnesium, potassium, calcium, that you wouldn't have been getting in any significant way in those protein bars, for example. And I didn't either. Yeah. And I consumed enough of those, you know, I mean, I consumed a boatload of those, you know, over 20 years. It didn't do me any good.
I have to say, looking back at our younger self, we should never say that we are dumb as a post or a stick, because I think we could both look at our past self. But you know what? That person got us to where we are now. We never would have arrived, I don't think, here had we had those experiences. So I just want to express an appreciation for that version of you who, like me, was loading up on all the seed oils and my healthy protein shakes and bars, you know. Well, we didn't know.
Also, for us, you know, we were coming from that bodybuilding background where it was all about getting as lean as possible and carefully measuring everything that you're taking in. And so to have just that protein bar that felt as if
it was a treat.
It could fit into the macro scheme and we could still make progress. But I always found it so interesting that in eliminating that, how much it improved. I'm going to say how I lost all my cravings for those types of foods. And, you know, you don't even recognize that as much as we point to sugar as being addictive, I think there is an addictive element too to these seed oils, because when these foods are being produced, they're being produced so that the bliss score is very high. And those people who are familiar with the bliss score, it's that combination of fat to salt to carbohydrates, usually particularly sugars or sweeteners. And you know, how else do you get there but by adding in that fat? And so now you have these foods that are highly addictive that are being promoted as being health foods, which is how most of us got caught up in this. Because like you, you know, I grew up an athlete. I always wanted to be muscular. I wanted to be strong. I wanted to be the best version of myself I could possibly be. And so we're just following conventional advice that says, this is the way that you eat. And oh, by the way, if you want to be your healthiest and enjoy it in the process, here's these protein bars that, you know, or here's this protein cookie. So, you know, with that said, can we go a little bit now into your book and ancestral eating and kind of lay out for everybody, you know, how do you define ancestral eating?
Okay, great question. And, you know, sometimes I'm almost at a loss to answer that, but because it's the ancestral diets, you know, I should just be able to answer this, like, you know, during a elevator ride, right? You know, it should be that easy. But let me just say that all populations have an ancestral diet. In other words, we, you know, and they're all different, right? In other words, Americans' ancestral diet is completely different than the Japanese, which is completely different than most Europeans, which is completely different from most South Pacific Islanders, for example. They're all very different. And, you know, they could be like Americans consumed in the 19th century, consumed more meat than anybody on the planet, with the exception of the Inuit, you know, what once called the Eskimos. But the Japanese and the Chinese, for example, their meat consumption was really low. Their animal consumption was extremely low. And yet, you know, they're both really healthy, right? So the Maasai warriors of Kenya and Tanzania, you know, their diet is mostly milk, meat, and blood from the cattle they herd, right? And Pacific Islanders, like the Catawbans, for example, that Staffan Lindeberg studied back in 1991, he lived with them for 6 weeks, and their diet was primarily coconut, fish, starchy tubers, and fruit, right? So their diet was 50% saturated fat coming from coconut, small, you know, really pretty small amount of fish. I think their protein was 10%. Again, so these diets are drastically different. So I just, when you start looking at all of these diets that all work, whether they're 90%+ carbohydrate, actually, and I could, you know, I haven't gone to that population today, but anyway, or, you know, almost the opposite, like the Inuit, extremely high fat, I think it's 47% fat. The Maasai were higher than that. They were like 66% fat. Yet these diets all work, right? But they all eliminate the same things. And it's really in ancestral diets, most of them just don't have significant sugar, refined, and they have no refined flours, and they have no vegetable oils. And so all of them, I've looked at these ancestrally living populations, like the Maasai, the Catawbans, South Pacific Islanders, 19th century Americans, 1950s Japanese, all of these populations had omega-6 linoleic acid consumption of about or less than 1.7% or less, right? And I told you that we were consuming 11.8% in the U.S. of our diet as omega-6 linoleic acid. So again, these are the things that I think it's easier just to say, you know, these are what ancestral diets eliminate: refined flour, sugars, and vegetable oils, and trans fats, essentially. But the trans fats come, the industrially produced trans fats come from the vegetable oils. And so if you eliminate vegetable oils, you'll also be eliminating industrially produced trans fat right there. So I hope that answers the question, Mike. That's essentially the way I think of ancestral diets.
I think sometimes it is easier to say what we shouldn't be consuming than it is to say this is what we should be consuming.
Right.
I mean, listen, you know, we're proponents of eating higher protein and higher amounts of animal fat and protein specifically. But at the same time, you know, we also recognize that sometimes people have their own aversions, they have their own preferences, they have, you know, you go down the list, but a person could still be exceptionally healthy and fit just by what they don't consume. And as soon as you just move off that path of consuming whole foods, right, be it vegetables, fruits, meat, you know, anything that essentially comes from the earth, as soon as you move off that path, you are almost immediately moving on to a path of ultra processed foods, eating, consuming large amounts of these vegetable oils, and the amount of linoleic acid that is found in them, obviously, as you've taught today to everybody, you know, is problematic.
I mean,
there is this stuff that's naturally occurring in those whole foods, but that only gets you to, as you described, that like 2.3% of what would be in our fat.
Look at something natural like berries, you know, people will say, oh my gosh, there's sugar in there. It's naturally occurring and it's balanced out with nutrients and things that are good. And like you said, when we remove something, it's replaced. So if we remove sugar and we remove flour and we remove seed oils, you're going to be hungry for other stuff. And in every one of the diets that you described, whether it was Chinese, Japanese, Inuit, the warriors in Kenya, everything there was living. Everything they consumed was living. And I feel like, yes, Mike's like reiterating what Mike said, it's just the simplest. I mean, we like to say the simplest way to eat is the straightest path from us to the sun. You know, if it was placed here for us, it's here for us. And I just love your no nonsense. I know that we want to tell people where to contact you, but selfishly, I have to ask one more final question. And that is, my amazing 91-year-old grandmother suffers from macular degeneration. So your interviews obviously caught my attention as well. What would you say for someone like her of Italian background, Italian descent, loves her Italian foods? What would be your best advice for someone like her that does have macular D? It hasn't progressed in the last 10 years, which is amazing. She's a pretty healthful, very fit woman. What would you say would be the best advice for someone like her?
Well, almost the same as for everybody else, you know, that she needs to be really careful that she's on a completely ancestral diet. Avoid all the highly polyunsaturated vegetable oils. Just avoid those like the plague. Make sure her diet is nutrient dense. And I know what you're driving at partly, I think, Mary Beth, is, you know, should she be cooking with olive oil, right? Or is that part of the question?
You got it.
Yeah. So I, you know, that's a tough question. And the reason is because I do think that olive oil probably in general is healthy. It's about 10% omega-6 linoleic acid as contrasted with the almost all natural foods, like, you know, like naturally raised, you know, beef, pork, chicken, fish, all of these are really low in omega-6. They're all under about 2.5 or 3% omega-6 linoleic acid, right? And so olive oil is higher than that, but I think olive oil gets away with it in terms of, you know, still being healthy because it's so rich in vitamin E and antioxidants. The problem is that, like in the US, 79% of this so-called extra virgin olive oils don't meet the criteria for good quality olive oil according to the North American Olive Oil Association. I think that's what it is. And so, in other words, they're adulterated for the most part. Many of these are being olive oils are being adulterated with the cheap, crummy oils like soybean oil and canola oil because they're, again, dirt cheap. And so when people think they're getting olive oil, 4 out of 5 bottles are not, or at least they're not quality, and they're out of date, they're older, they're oxidized already, they're higher in omega-6. We've got, you know, some serious problems with this. But if you could completely trust the olive oil, it's, you know, it's authentic, you know that it's, you know, it's fresh, it's stored properly, it's, you know, it's remained cool, it's in a dark place, those kind of things, and you consume it within 6 weeks after it was bottled, I think it's absolutely fine. those are the things that I would tell her.
That's awesome advice. I love that. You know, we tend to avoid the plastic containers of olive oil, always glass, always dark glass, and then cold pressed is what we look for. So I love your common sense advice.
I just want to go with that just for a second longer. Is there any place that you know of where people could go to find out, you know, or where they could find healthier versions of these oils? Not sure if in your research you've come across any place.
Yeah, there is an organization. I just went blank on it, Mike. So I just can't seem to spit that out. But there are a couple of organizations. That North American Olive Oil Association is one of them. There's another one. I'm just blanking. I'm sorry, but that has vetted all these different olive oils, and they're the ones that have made the statement: 79% of olive oils are not good quality in the U.S. So. But I really think even with that, I think the best thing to do is if you're going to consume olive oil, I think you should try to get it from the producer and directly if you can. And if you can, go there and confirm to yourself that it's true, authentic olive oil and that it's, you know, fresh and properly bottled.
Mike, we're going to Italy.
Yeah, we've had some good olive oil while we were over there, that's for sure.
You just need to go to Italy every 6 weeks and go to the best place and get your oil, right? And come back.
Yeah.
Just a short little trip.
Yeah, only a few hours. But I think that that's one of the even more simpler things to do for a lot of people is to just maybe just make the switch altogether, though, from consuming all oils, even olive oil, to cooking with butter.
Absolutely.
You know, lard, tallow, you know, these things that we know, okay, these have not been, you know, they're not having anything mixed in. And that's always what I find troubling if I go to the supermarket. I don't go that often, but if I do happen to go and you turn over that bottle of oil, you do see it says on it extra virgin olive oil, but then you see safflower. Like, what is safflower doing in here if it's extra virgin olive oil?
They're blends.
Yeah. And
blends.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's sort of the challenge. And then for the person who is trying to do their shopping and they're trying to be economical and, you know, they think they're doing the right thing, both health-wise for themselves and for their family, but also trying to be economically intelligent, you know, it's very easy to fall into this trap. And that's why I just hope with people listening to this, that they come to realize like, okay, I actually have to take more of my health decisions and my decisions around food into my own hands and not rely upon the information that I'm getting from the media or, you know, the latest study Harvard published, because at the end of the day, you know, it's all this is very confusing for a lot of people. And honestly, we do this full time. I mean, you do this full time and it can still be confusing. So we understand, you know, and we have sympathy for the consumer out there who is trying to do the right thing by themselves, by their family. And so I think that just the general advice that you've given us, though, today around ancestral eating and the way that we should be approaching it is what everybody, I hope, takes from this conversation and starts thinking about or looking for where these seed oils are slipping into their diet and become more cognizant of it, because I think that you've pointed to it with all of the data that you've presented, that we are only being taken in a direction that is far worse than where we've been, you know, 20, 40, 60 years ago. And it's up to us to, number one, reverse that trend, and number two, to start educating our family and others about it as well.
Yeah. You got to start with yourself. And by the way, Mike, I cook everything in butter, everything. I don't use olive oil at all because I don't really trust it. I mean, and we don't, being in Denver, that we don't have any olive oil producers here. So, you know, there wouldn't be any olive oil trees growing here. So, or olive oil, you know, olive trees growing here. But anyway, so I just think people should, for the most part, should just cook in butter, really, because it's, you know, it's the safest thing there is. And it's the most nutrient dense of any of the animal fats, essentially, that's readily available to cook in. Yeah. It's even more nutrient dense than tallow. What, Kari Beth?
I was going to say, don't say that too loud. You know, Big Pharma is going to hear that and start putting plastic in our butter. So we got to keep that under wraps.
There you go.
Well, thank you so very much for your time. Mike, he scouts out the best people in the industry. And I would definitely say you are one of the best. We really appreciate what you do. This information is invaluable. And we'll be sure to put in the show notes how people can find you. But how can people find you?
Okay. Oh, thank you so much, Corey Beth and Mike. I appreciate you guys having me on. And can I just shamelessly plug the book?
Yes.
This is our new book, The Ancestral Diet Revolution. It's by me and my co-author, Suzanne Alexander. And I say shamelessly plug this book because we don't earn anything from this. We don't accept royalties from this book. We run two nonprofit organizations, Cure AMD Foundation and Ancestral Health Foundation. And we also do not accept any compensation from those organizations. So we do this work because we believe in this mission and we're trying to help people understand what we understand and get healthy, remain healthy, and prevent all this chronic disease and suffering. So, you know, we feel like we're both in our early 60s and we've benefited massively from changing our own diets towards this, this to an ancestral diet, essentially. And we just want to spread this message. So and people can find us essentially, mostly on YouTube, like what you guys are doing here, or podcasts. We only have a website for Cure AMD Foundation. That's at cureamd.org. We'll soon have a website for Ancestral Health Foundation, which will be at ancestralhealthfoundation.org. That'll be coming soon. And we do have for both organizations, we have Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Suzanne runs those, so I don't know much about those things. I don't like social media, quite frankly, but anyway, she runs that.
You're on the same page. Corey Beth does all social media for us, and I just go along for the ride.
I just can't do it.
I'm the Instagram husband. That's my role in this.
Yeah. But
we're going to link to all of that. Definitely going to link to the book. So appreciate you and the work that you're doing. And, you know, we love that we have an opportunity to help get your message out there today to our listeners, because we just find it to be so important. And I can't say thank you enough for being here with us today.
Oh, thank you guys so much. I appreciate you. And thanks for helping us spread this message. We appreciate you immensely. One day you might have my co-author, Suzanne Alexander, on your show. She's really good. She's got a wealth of knowledge. She's been studying nutrition practically since she was a kid, because she grew up with, didn't know it, but she had celiac disease and had all kinds of health issues. And so, but she's a wealth of knowledge as well.
That's awesome.
She will be my next email. Tell her to be on. Okay.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys. I appreciate you very much.
Thanks for tuning in. If you're a busy working parent like us, you understand the daily challenges. Our mission is to make exercise and nutrition simple and exciting, helping you and your family thrive even on the busiest days. We've got a fantastic free 5-day online challenge that's tailor-made for super busy people like you.
If you like a high-vibe workout environment with professional coaching, swing by one of our franchise studios for a free intro workout.
Check the show notes for details or head on over to purephysique.com when you have a moment. We know those moments are rare.
Until next time, lift weights, eat meat, and never forget, you were created on purpose for a purpose.
Who's the more foolish, the fool or the fool who follows him?
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.